You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Little Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? I took my Cobra down the track, hitched to the back of my Cadillac. Everyone was there just to wait for me. There were plenty of stingrays and XKs. Spring, little Cobra, getting ready to strike. Spring, little Cobra, with all your might. Spring, little Cobra, getting ready to strike. Spring, little Cobra, with all your might. Hey, little Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut 'em down?
Well, we're always ready to strike here at TPC, and boy, there are a few things we'd love to shut down. And that day will come, ladies and gentlemen, and when it does, you will have been a part of it through your support of this work and of guests like this gentleman who is joining us now for the first time. We'll talk more about that in a second, but it is Mike Painovich. Perhaps you have known him in the past as Mike Enoch as well, the founder of therightstuff.biz and the chairman of the National Justice Party. Mike, it is really a treat after all these years to have you on tonight. I'm glad we're doing it. I regret that it took this long to do it.
Yeah, and thanks very much for having me on. I'm just glad to be here, glad to talk to you, and be able to reach out to your audience.
Well, I couldn't be more impressed with the team that you have assembled over there at TRS. Obviously, we have admired the work being done there from afar for years, and more recently have gotten in touch and done some collaborating with Warren Balog and Trey Garrison. It is just really, really top-shelf content.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the compliment. That's really flattering. You know, we do our best, and that's great to hear. Thank you.
Well, Mike, you're very welcome. And you and I talked for a bit earlier today, sort of game planning this interview. You know, we want to cover a lot of ground, and we don't have a lot of time to do it. So let's just get right to it then. And we're going to bring Keith Alexander, my co-host, in for some questions in the next segment. But first, tell our audience how you came to be involved in this movement, including your rise to becoming such a prominent voice. I guess you would call this your entry and evolution, so to speak, up to and through the Trump campaign 2015 and 16.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been a in my youth, I was sort of a bit of a liberal leftist. You know, as I was raised, I'm from New Jersey, originally New York and New Jersey, and sort of raised in a liberal family. But that never really sat well with me. Like, I never really felt good about the kind of politics that I was talking about. And I became intrigued with libertarianism, I would say probably early 20s. And I stayed basically a libertarian for about 10 years. And I always preferred sort of the patriot wing and the sort of the edgy wing of the libertarian movement, if you will, the one that was less concerned with political correctness and more concerned with, you know, kind of like getting in people's faces and maybe being a little bit aggressive and edgy with people. That kind of appealed to me. And I would say probably right around 2010 to 2012 or so, I think there was a surge of libertarians. I think the second election of Barack Obama created a big surge of libertarian-minded people to a more racial, a pro-white racial point of view, because we kind of realized that, you know, white people are kind of the ones getting screwed here, and libertarianism only addresses one part of that question. And along with myself and some other friends I knew online, you know, we were having chat groups and internet groups, and I noticed that in the group that we had, people were writing really good long form like posts back and forth to each other. And I was like, some of this stuff is good. Let's make a website so it can be read by the general public, not just the people in this group. So I went out and I got the group we had on Facebook was called The Right Stuff. And so I just registered the domain name, and we started publishing the blog posts under that name. And then we started a podcast about 2014. So we started a podcast about 2014, and it's kind of history from there. That got very popular very fast, and it kind of coincided with the first Black Lives Matter movement with Michael Brown in Ferguson there. That kind of coincided with the very beginning of the podcast. And then we also rode the wave of the Trump campaign. And then eventually we became kind of like a voice, a pro-white voice unto ourselves.
That's actually what I want to talk to you about next. You closed right there, and something that allows me a seamless transition into what was going to be my next question. And it's interesting what you said, because you are quite right. At the end of the Obama era, or the second term of the Obama era, the tears of awakening that our people have experienced over the course of the last decade and change, you had that initial tear that you described. And then, of course, there's a whole nother tear that has taken place during the Trump administration and in the post-Trump years. But I want to focus, which has further, I think, taking us closer to where we want the population to be. We'll talk more about that. But during the Trump years, we were all making a lot of noise and a lot of news during that period between 2015 and 2017. Nobody can forget that two-year period. So looking back on that particular time frame, what was our collective doing right, in your opinion? And what mistakes did we make? And what did we learn going forward with our activism?
Well, I think the most famous event, of course, would be Charlottesville, which I had a part in. I was invited to speak at Charlottesville, and I hadn't fully intended to go and speak. I think what we did right was we were unapologetic, and we were out there in public and in people's faces, and we were not apologizing for who we were, and we had new courage because the Trump campaign and Trump actually getting elected gave us a real, like, it really put the wind in our sails. And so we felt like we were on top of the world, particularly in, even if Trump himself later on became a disappointment, just the fact that we felt like, okay, we've really shown these people that the people of this country just aren't on board with what they're doing. And so I think that was very good, to be unapologetic about our beliefs, to be out there openly telling people. I think with Charlottesville in particular, the mistake was underestimating the vehemence with which they were going to come at us, and being sort of unprepared, like not having our ducks in a row. Not that we did anything wrong. Of course, we did nothing wrong. We were fully within our moral, legal, constitutional rights to do.
Nobody could
have
anticipated that. I don't think anybody at the time could have anticipated the trap that had been laid there.
Yeah, no, I don't. I sort of agree with that, but I think that was the learning process, and those of us that went through the Charlottesville experience have come out stronger because we have understood how that works. Now, funny thing is, there are some activists from Europe who have told me, like, oh man, you guys stepped right into it. They've been doing this stuff for years. And we were like, oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but, the government collaboration of it all. I mean, certainly we might could have expected violence from Antifa and BLM. But the government being obviously a part of laying that trap, I don't know if I'd seen that before.
Yeah, the fact that, well, that was sort of what, I mean, if you want to call it a mistake, it might have just been like growing pains, if you will. Like we were naive and we had to understand. Some people say like, oh, you shouldn't have done this or that, or these guys shouldn't have been there, or this group shouldn't have been there. And my view at the time was, well, I can't tell these other people what to do. And so we're just going to go and do what we're going to do. But
hold on,
I think
right there,
the naivete.
Well, I mean, but look, we had done some public demonstrations in public parks here going back to our early years on the air in the mid-2000s, 2004, 2005, 2006. We never had anything like that. That was new. But we're going to continue this conversation with Mike Painovich of TRS and NJP next. Keith Alexander going to get in on this.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
This is a battle. a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
Back with you, we are, ladies and gentlemen, with our featured guest of the evening, Mike Painovich of The Right Stuff and the National Justice Party. I want to give Keith Alexander the opportunity to say hello and ask him of these questions. But before we do that, just a quick wrap-up on what we were talking about, Mike. And I don't want to revisit Charlottesville too extensively because we've covered that quite extensively over the years. And the book, we did a broadcast with a reporter in Charlottesville. Really, probably, perhaps the greatest show we ever did was on the night of Charlottesville. It was on a Saturday, just hours after the events of that day. We broadcast live, and we went to a lot of people there, just raw eyewitness testimony. A lot of it was cited in the book, in fact, Charlottesville Untold by Ann Wilson Smith, that came out late last year. But even Charlottesville, though, Mike, I think helped serve this greater awakening and awareness of white people to the racial realities in this country. Okay, so whites don't have the freedom to assemble and to get a permit to demonstrate on the public square.
Yeah.
So the awakenings of whites before, during, and after Trump is what I want to talk to you about. Then I'm tossing it over to Keith. Certainly the terroristic actions of BLM and Antifa have helped wake up white people in ways that perhaps we couldn't. But it has proven, too, that we were right all along on these issues. We've been proven right. So quick answer to a quick question for you, Mike. Are we seeing now a case where time and circumstance is catching up to the facts?
100%. I mean, I'm actually, despite sort of what things are looking like, I'm not particularly, I was probably more down about the prospects of this movement and white people, not just in America, but, you know, Europe as well, just the race, a few years ago. But now I feel like, and it's not particularly pleasant that the circumstances are what they are, but again, we didn't create these circumstances. We're just the leading edge of people telling the public, this is what's happening, this is how this is going to go. And I remember the summer of 2020, when, you know, the rioting, the looting, the burning, the terrorism, and the takedown of more statues, not just Confederate statues, but any statue of a white person they could find. They didn't even necessarily have to know who it was. And at that time I was out there screaming, like, we told you this would happen. Like, we told you this would happen. Like, we always knew this was going to happen. And that experience was very traumatic, I think, for a lot of white people in America, and the powerlessness that they felt. And, then also to see that the Republican Party as a vehicle has just continually let them down and let them down and let them down. And that's another sort of necessary thing that has to happen. And my view is that we have to understand we are still a majority. And even that stops being the case, we still have the moral right to defend our lives, defend our race, defend our country, and defend ourselves from the people that are actually trying to replace us in this country that our ancestors founded. So it's but I think that this is, people are waking up to this. And maybe later on I can share an anecdote which makes me really think that. So yeah, I think people are, and it's always going to come with trauma, unfortunately, but that's how the world works. That's just how it is. You know, we wouldn't need to do this if what they were doing, if what the government and the corporate global system, what the Zionist system, if they weren't doing awful things, we wouldn't have to do this. So, of course, it's going to come with some pain and trauma. But yes, people are I think I'm getting a feeling, just the general zeitgeist out there, that people are really ready for change now.
Mike, this is Keith Alexander. You said you started out as a libertarian. When did you cross the bridge and conclude that anti-white animus was really the motivating factor of the left?
I'd say like that realization came to me, I'd said, about 12, between 2010 and 2012. And by 2012, 10 years ago, I was fully aware of that. And that's when I founded the website, was 2012. So it's been 10 okay. years. Amazing.
Let me just ask you, you are involved with the National Justice Party. In fact, you're probably the prime mover.
The chairman.
Mm-hmm. Is that a normal political party where you're going to run slates of candidates, or is it more of a bully pulpit?
We are right now using it as a rallying point, as a bully pulpit, as an organizing principle, as a vector, whatever. It's something for people to see us, to be visible, to rally around. And, you know, running candidates is certainly not off the table. But we have my view on this, and this is something we discuss actively. We only have a certain amount of resources, and the actual electoral politics game is a huge time sink, money sink, effort sink. Like, people will put in hours and hours doing paperwork, doing bureaucracy, meeting these requirements. And right now we need to get the message out more so, because we could do all of that work, but since we're still new and relatively small, it would just result in, the predictable thing, which is just we wouldn't win an election. Right, the sheer amount of money that the Democrats and the Republicans have would just crush us. So what we need first and foremost is people. We need awareness. And so what we want to do is show people, you know, there are active white people out here doing this stuff, organizing and bringing people together, holding events. We just had an event at the end of April. We had 250 people in attendance to spend a day together. Listen to speeches. We had some music. We had some local craftspeople, you know, vending their products, and it was just a great time. And so we want to continue to do conferences and meetings, and protests and activism to kind of spread the word and build support. And I think we have to build support before we try and enter the sort of official politics game, which is very rigged anyway. So like, I don't want to spend a lot of energy on a game that's rigged when there's something that we can do where we can be much more constructive, which is just going and spreading the word. Eventually, yes, we probably will have to do that. But no, as of right now, we're not here to like compete in elections as of the current time.
Well, Mike, what would you point to as probably the best thing that you've done so far? I know that documentary on Waukesha was absolutely excellent. Tell me about that and the reaction, or if there is something else that you would like to point to.
Well, Mike, I would ask you, Keith, that's a great question, and I would say that the NJP-produced documentary about the anti-white terror attack on the Christmas parade in Waukesha was just brilliantly done and powerfully done. The presentation of a message is perhaps as important as the message itself. And so you're seeing, again, top flight work here. And we had Trey Garrison on the week after Buffalo to talk about that documentary. And we posted it to our website. We embedded it in a blog post, so you can go check it out there. But was this something that was attacked or just completely ignored by the mainstream media, because it just totally eviscerated how these killings
are done?
I thought
it was very effective, and I wondered what type of reaction you felt like you got for it.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because when you get like just dead silence, you know, you can wonder like, did they hate it or it is strange that there was very little reaction to it, but no, they didn't. They can't really refute it. And one of the things we did was, you know, after the attack last November on the Christmas parade in Waukesha, which was, as everyone knows, and I'm sure you guys have told your audience many times, a blatant racial attack by a black criminal, intentionally, with malice aforethought, went and drove into those people because he hated them, because he racially hated them. And
it was a classic example of a hate crime.
Yeah. Well, and in his own words, he admitted this. Yes.
Yes.
It's not conjecture.
And that can be documented in our own Joseph Jordan, also known as Eric Stryker, his reporting on that. He broke that story. that actually went very viral, was his article on that. Even outlets like Gateway Pundit and I think Andy and Go and people like that were picking up on that and re-reporting his initial facts. So we went up. We decided that week, like, let's just go there. And so we were there the next weekend doing a protest in front of the courthouse. And there were some people that tried to mess with us. But they were demoralized because what are you going to say? Like, no, we're in favor of this. Like, it's a very difficult position. You know, they know that they're, you know, the anti-white force is out there. They don't like it. But it's very difficult to go out and say, like, yeah, we just approve of this black terrorist.
Well, the perp admitted it, didn't he? The perp admitted that it was anti-white, right?
Oh, yes. Well, what happened was that they were trying to, the media was trying to concoct an excuse for him, saying that he was fleeing some kind of knife incident. And the guy himself, Daryl Brooks, admitted to the reporters, the Media to Rise reporter, that just wasn't true. Like, our reporter asked him directly, were you running from a knife incident? And he was like, absolutely not. No. So
like,
that bombshell piece of news, you would think that would be national news. But totally ignored.
But not so, by the National Justice Party and the right stuff. And by this
the
program.
Political
system. Yeah, you're damn right. Well, we've got the man, Mike Painovich, with us. And we're going to talk
giving pain to our enemies.
I like that. That's a tagline. We should use that. Anyway, we'll be back with Mike more right after this. And we'll talk a little bit more about his organizations and the great people you can get in contact with there. Stay tuned.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Ukrainian and British officials are warning that Russian forces are relying on weapons able to cause mass casualties. The UK's defense ministry says Russian bombers have likely been launching heavy 1960s-era anti-ship missiles in Ukraine. These missiles were primarily designed to destroy aircraft carriers using a nuclear warhead. Justin Crump, a British military expert and veteran British Army tank commander, tells Sky News that Russia is using whatever they can get their hands on.
I guess Russia's figuring there aren't that many enemy ships to deal with, so they are using these missiles in their secondary role of land attack, but they're not brilliant at that. It's a further indication of how Russia is having to use everything at its disposal to keep achieving its ends.
Meanwhile, the governor of Luhansk is accusing Russia of using flamethrowers on civilians in a village in his eastern Ukrainian province. This is USA Radio News.
Paid for by GovMint.com.
Have you heard? The United States Mint has issued the Morgan Silver Dollar for the first time in 100 years. Not only that, but they are also minted in 99.9% pure silver for the first time ever in history. Coin experts are calling this an amazing opportunity for anyone that knows the enduring popularity of Morgans. But you must hurry. Only 175,000 legal tender silver dollars were issued. These Morgan Silver Dollars are brand new, bright and shiny legal tender coins minted by the iconic Philadelphia Mint. Just call 1-800-888-7630 and you are guaranteed a new 99.9% pure silver Morgan dollar. The first time in history this has happened. But with limited quantities, you must call now to order. To learn more, call 1-800-888-7630. If you order now, you will receive a free collector bonus, a $25 value free with every order. Call 1-800-888-7630 now to secure your new Morgan silver dollars before they are gone. That's 1-800-888-7630.
Pete Arredondo, the Uvalde School District Police Chief who has been under fire since the mass shooting at an elementary school in Texas, broke his silence to the Texas Tribune. The interview was done over the phone with his attorney on the line. Arredondo told the outlet that he never considered himself the incident commander. James Barragan is one of the reporters who interviewed Arredondo. He spoke to CNN.
He is telling, or at least he told us in our interview, definitively that he went in there. He never thought he was the incident commander, never identified himself as the incident commander, and really never gave an order for any officers to stand down for breaching the room.
Officials with the Texas Department of Public Safety described Arredondo as the incident commander who made the call to stand down and treat the incident as a barricaded suspect. Arredondo told the Texas Tribune that he called for assistance and asked for an extraction tool to open the door. The chief's interview comes as thousands marched in Washington demanding Congress enact more gun control. You're listening to USA Radio News.
And we're back with Mike Painovich. We're going to be sure to give you all of the contact information for his organizations that work in cooperation with one another and certainly complement one another, the Right Stuff and the National Justice Party. A comment in this hour from a listener up in New Jersey, and he writes, "This is a legendary show. The two greatest communicators we have, bringing all generations of the North, the South, and the rest of the world together. My goodness, are we doing all that? I'm happy to sit back and be a fan and enjoy this show." Well, I'm so glad you're enjoying it. I'm enjoying it, too.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Mike, the old joke is a conservative is a liberal who has been mugged, yet many white victims, including the families of murdered whites, still support BLM and open borders. How do you explain this derangement? And I think, I would certainly believe that this is a case of weak-minded people desperately seeking the approval of their abusers.
Stockholm syndrome.
Can these people, in your opinion, might be made whole again, or are you too far gone at that point? Now, you know, we're talking about the reclamation and the reformation of our people who have gone to this dark place.
Well, I think that that is a very, and as we say, black-pilling thing to see. It's a very depressing thing to see, and it's demoralizing for people. But my view is, if people are like that, like we had this incident with this guy, the father of this young girl, Molly Tibbetts, who was murdered by an illegal immigrant several years ago. I believe it was in Iowa. And her father was a big, you know, kind of like a libtard. And he was out there, like, saying, you know, that he supported immigration. He didn't want it used for bad stuff. And this girl, Kate Steinle, that was likewise murdered by an illegal immigrant.
Right.
And her family was saying it. And my view is, like, you know what, to those people, it's not just about you. Like, because you want to make it about you, and you want to worry about your social status, your privileges. And you want to retain those because you're worried the system is going to punish you if you speak out about your own family member's death. But other people are going to die. And so it's not just about you. And so when they've come out and said these things, I'm like, frankly, I'm going to disregard your wishes to not talk about your daughter because other white people are going to get attacked. We have the right to speak about it. It's happening to us as a race. It's not simply about your family. That's my response to those people. But generally, I just disregard them. They're hopeless cases and not worth worrying about. There are plenty of people who are not like that. And a good example was actually the father of this young girl that was murdered in Fargo. He actually gave his blessing to the protest action we did in Fargo last weekend. And he understands that his daughter's tragic and brutal, horrific murders, 14-year-old girl, horrifically murdered by a black African from, I believe, no one knows. There's a controversy if he's from Liberia or Ivory Coast. I'm like, what does it even matter? But and of course, the city government is rushing to try and protect him. Pretend that he was mentally ill, let him use some kind of insanity defense, protect him from any scrutiny from any of the media or the public. It's really disgusting. And so I think increasingly you're going to see more people that are like, well, in theory, that kind of behavior, that kind of cucky behavior would be the result of somebody thinking they still had a scrap left that they can beg for from the elite table. But those scraps aren't on offer, so you're not going to get anything for that stuff anymore. And I think a lot of people are coming to realize that. And at some point, those people themselves are just going to be looked down upon and will become pariahs. And that's as it should be. I mean, they should become pariahs for behaving like that. So, yeah.
Well, someone needs to remind them they don't have a copyright on their child's situation.
Well, as Barack Obama said, you know, pardon the interruption, Keith. I want you to finish the thought. But as Obama said, Trayvon Martin could have been his son. You know, so go ahead, Keith.
Yeah. So Kate Steinle could have been our daughter. That's so right. You know, Molly Tibbetts. So that's exactly. You know, it's a form of Stockholm syndrome. I think trying to, you know, you talk about closing the barn door after the horse is out. That's you know, they've killed your child. What can they offer you that would compensate you for that? And it's absurd. But let me ask you this. There are plenty of people on the right that have a very scholarly and, you know, very buttoned down type of approach to all of this stuff.
And we need that too.
On the other hand, we also here at the Political Cesspool try to have the common touch. What do you think is the proper approach for communicating our message to our people?
Well, have you ever if you ever listened to my show, you can tell that we our inspiration initially from my co-host and myself on the Right Stuff podcast was Opie and Anthony. Believe it or not, I think you might have had a conversation with.
Well, we interviewed. Yes, we interviewed Anthony Cumia. Quite covered, in fact.
Yeah, yeah. But we don't need to rehash all that. But yes, I was a fan of his growing up as a kid, and so we kind of copied that kind of, you know, working class, you know, kind of, you know, in your face comedy style, and we do that, but we also mix in like some philosophy and racial science and things like that. So we try and mix highbrow and low, and I never think that just because, you know, I don't think common people are like stupid, like ordinary, average, working class people. I don't think that they're dumb, so we don't need to talk down to them. But there's definitely a method of communicating that people understand is more genuine, and we try and use that approach too. We are just who we are. Like, we're not playing characters. So when you watch our show or you listen to our show, like, that's just who we are. Like, we're laughing and joking around, but then it's sometimes like we'll get serious and I'll go on like a long rant about some political issue or the news topics of the day and things like that. So it's a good mix of everything.
It's interesting what you said and how you phrased it. We don't play characters. That is exactly, we use that exact same phrase here on TPC. I've used it for years. And I think it's a key. You want your audience to be able to relate to you. So you want to be real.
Yeah. You've got to be authentic in their eyes. Let me ask you, talking about authentic, what about politicians like Ron DeSantis? Do you think he is authentic? Do you think he's playing us, or what do you think?
Okay, he's a complete phony. I don't think he's real at all. In fact, I'm heavily critical.
Can he be useful?
But
let me ask you: can he be useful? Can even politicians who, with their finger to the wind, look? I like some of the things he said. I like some of the things he's done. You're not getting. He mentioned that the Waukesha.
Right.
He mentioned that was an anti-white attack. I mean, can he be used? I'm not saying he's our guy. Can he be used?
Yes, well, here's my view on that. My view on that is the Republican Party wants to I don't know how to say this without being vulgar. They want to seal the deal without having to kiss you. But I would say this, if you know what I mean. But
I know what you mean.
I will never trust a Republican politician. But and when Republican politicians go out there and they say those kinds of things, and particularly after the experience of Trump, I'm not going to trust them. But when they say those kinds of things, my instinct is, great, what caused him to say that? What was in the political winds? What was in the atmosphere that made him feel like he had to go out and say that? Let's do more of that. So
let me ask you this.
If he's doing something good, keep up the pressure.
Well, we were just talking about this in the first hour. Now, we've been talking about this. It's almost been a weekly topic, is that, the GOP didn't all of a sudden change, but the white voting base in the GOP has certainly changed. They have certainly become more racially aware to the extent now that prominent GOP politicians in the party itself are having to pay lip service
at the very least. They need to communicate with
explicitly
their
pro-white,
base.
Explicitly pro-white talking points, and even in votes now.
This is what I think is vitally important. This is the key thing on that, is that they're not doing it because they want to. They're doing it because they have to. And they have to do it because of our activism, what you guys are doing, what we're doing, what all the pro-white people are doing. So what we can't do is say, oh, Ron DeSantis is the guy. Let's rest on our laurels and take care of it. Because the minute you do that, he's going to turn around and he's going to start building Holocaust memorials and start talking about nothing but low taxes again. So that's the point. Just keep up.
Mike, let me ask you this.
You're right, Mike.
What's the best way to handle the JQ? Okay? Just ask us that. You know, that's what you suggested in your answer. They'll go back to that. How can we raise awareness with that?
In my opinion, Ron DeSantis isn't going back to that. Like, if he wins the election, he's going to be celebrating from Tel Aviv. I mean, that's just how it is.
Well, that's actually how I first came to know DeSantis was of his slavish support for Israel. And then he started saying all of these good things. And that's the question, though. Does it really matter why, or just does it matter because
that it is?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Keith.
Well, I would say no, because if we get what we want, that's fine. But my only point is that he can't be the focus of it. The focus of it has to be us, has to be whites and our rights and our future. And I always say, like, when we get these people, because, you know, Tucker Carlson also, who is a figure who I find at least more appealing, is that, you know, I find him less repellent than Ron DeSantis. He's good, too. But we've got to make sure we keep the pressure up to keep it so these guys have to keep talking like this.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. Oh, my goodness. We've only got one segment left with Mike. But it's going to be a good one, and these last three have been fantastic. So we'll wrap it up with Mike next, and we'll continue on this. There's one more thing I want to say about this, and we'll see what he says, and then we'll talk a little bit more about his organization. Stay tuned.
American Freedom News is your daily one-stop website that will keep you fully informed. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of the big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as it provides truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first and in the historic American nation. Many Americans are finally waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America and Western civilization can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
In message one, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they use the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power, Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day, end-time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
We've got to make haste this last segment. More ground than we can cover with Mike Painovich, but what a wonderful debut appearance, even after all these years. Mike, how did it happen like that? All the people we know we know everybody. All of the people we know are the same people, and we've existed in this universe with maybe slightly but very similar orbits. I don't know how it took us this long to connect, but I'm so glad it happened.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, who knows? It just, you know, it feels like I'm just busy all the time. So, you know, who knows? But, yes, I'm really happy that finally through, thanks to Warren, you know, we got in touch and doing this show. It's great.
Okay, so with regard to current trends, and again, this is what we're talking about, and it's always been the case. Politicians are going to do whatever's best for them, and whether it's left, whether it's right, they're going to take the path of least resistance. So that has always been the case. So we shouldn't be surprised now that our issues are becoming more mainstream. I mean, our issues are really mainstream now. With regards to the Trump voting base, there's just no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. That was not the case in 2015. It is the case now. And so Republicans are beginning to fall in line. Are they sincere? No, they're not sincere. But to me, it doesn't matter. So that's the question as we begin to...
As long as the message is getting reported, as long as it has been said.
As long as they do what we want to do. I don't care what they really believe.
I think I agree, but I maybe slightly, from a slightly different perspective. Because
I would rather me or you or Keith be elected and be in there. I mean, a true believer,
sure.
But I mean, if this is the best
getting word, credit for saying it, but if they're saying what we would say, you know, more power to them.
Yes, and my only thing is what I want people to do is never put faith in them. When you see a Republican politician go out there and say the right thing, you should, instead of saying, hey, I like this guy, he's doing great work, you should pat yourself on the back.
Because
he had to do that.
Because he's intellectually flabby. As soon as the pressure's off, he's going to revert back to what he was before.
He's going to go back to the people that are financing him and possibly have a folder on his activities that could be released if he doesn't do what they want.
There you go.
So, yeah, I just think it's ultimately up to us. I think the lesson of Donald Trump and a lot of the failures of him to enact the policies he promised, particularly the ones that would have helped white people, it really jaded me on that stuff. And so my view is, look, if he's got to make sure they don't just say it, get elected, and then do something totally different, because that happens a lot too. We got to always keep on their case, keep watch on them, and keep the pressure up. We can never let the pressure off. Never turn down the temperature on the boiler. Keep it going.
You're right. You're right. You got to keep it on them. I mean, if we can't be in there, if people who aren't necessarily with us on the issues are doing it out of coercion or because that's where the voters are.
They're doing it because it's become popular. And what do they say? Imitation is the ultimate form of flattery.
But the thing is, and it's been part because of the people out there toiling in the vineyards, like Mike and so many others that we feature on this program on a regular basis, and even ourselves, and of course the voting base and time and circumstances we mentioned have come. But Mike, let's talk about your organizations. Let's plug those heavily. And I know you are optimistic about the future because you just mentioned that, but what does, look into your crystal ball. What does the next couple of years look like for our people, for TRS, and for NJP?
Well, for TRS, TRS is it's a website where we have podcasts. We have a number of different podcasts, so many I can't list them all, but people can go to therightstuff.biz and check them out. That's sort of like my day job. We do our show. There's a show out every day during the week and one over the weekend. And so that's where people can subscribe and pay us a small amount, $10 a month. And we can that keeps the food on our table so we can keep doing our work and making the shows that everyone loves. And then the NJP is sort of like this political vehicle, which is not to make a profit or not to make money for us. But all the money that collects goes into further events and activism and things like that. We created that as sort of a rallying point, a place for people to rally around, to host events, pro-white events, to host political rallies, and to do protests and activism for pro-white causes, and really to call attention to the things that are not being called attention to. And like I said, we did the just last weekend. We went up to Fargo to do a protest over the death. So this young girl, 14-year-old girl, was murdered by this African in Fargo. And this happened about a year ago, so this is the year anniversary of her death. It was a brutal, horrible attack. He stalked her and then tortured her for about 20 minutes. She was in a coma for 4 days before she passed. And it was just a brutal, tragic, terrible thing. And I can't even imagine what her father went through and is still going through. And so we went up to do a protest about that and to put the word out that they are trying to cover for this black criminal by giving him some kind of fake insanity plea or something like that. It's a very complicated issue. We have a video on our protest and what's going on in Fargo that's going to be coming out in a couple of days. And then a longer documentary on the whole thing in the style of the Waukesha documentary will be maybe a few weeks or a month or so down the road. But we're going to have an initial video out in the next couple of days on the activism we did there, much in the style of the Waukesha documentary, so you guys will probably like it. And we're just going to keep doing that. And we had a 250-person event a couple of months ago. We're hoping to have a 500-person event this summer and maybe a 1,000-person event next year and just grow from there. If we can double every year, exponential growth like that, and soon we'll be having just mass rallies. That's the goal.
Power. It's absolutely happening, folks, and we do remote broadcasts from a location here in the South. We'll be back there in July, And they're getting 1,000 people. They're getting 1,000 people to come out, and these aren't members of any organization. Their names aren't on any lists, but they are coming.
It's true grassroots activism.
And this is the thing that was said when I was there last year, is that when the river is allowed to flow freely, it leads back to us. It leads back here. Mm-hmm. This is a good question that came in, Mike, from a listener, and this is what he writes. Like the political cesspool, been on the air since 04, The Daily Show us since 14, and several other podcasts on The Right Stuff have been going on for years. This question to you, Mike, and this is a good question because there is a proliferation of content creators now. New ones are coming online all the time. What tips would you give to any new podcasters or pro-white content creators of any kind?
Oh, man. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I would say what you want to do is don't pander. Just to say what you think. I mean, I know it sounds kind of like cheesy, like just be yourself. But I mean, you know, if you're radical, if you have radical ideas politically, be radical on your show and tell it like it really is. Don't try and tailor, because the idea that we need to tailor to certain preferences and ideas that maybe like normie conservatives have or normie Americans or whatever. My view increasingly is that we need to just tell them what it is, and they'll be so surprised by it. They'll have to think, and, you know, maybe they'll like what they see, maybe they won't. But eventually, we're going to attract the best people anyway. So we just have to – I think we just have to continue being radical and just telling the truth, not trying to cater to any particular – or don't get too comfortable either. Don't get too comfortable thinking, oh, here's one issue that this particular audience likes. Let's just harp on that again and again. You know, that would be my advice, I guess.
Well, what I say is you need to be plain as a billy goat's ass on a stump, okay?
That's a Southern colloquialism, right, Keith?
Yeah, that's it. You just go ahead and tell it, and, you know, devil take the hindmost, and, you know, don't worry about how it plays in Dubuque or in New York or wherever. Just go ahead and put it out there, because that's what people are looking for.
You would be surprised how much people are looking for this. Like the experience we had in Fargo, where after we got done with our protest at the courthouse, we went over to the VFW hall for a drink, and we shared a toast with the vets there. Most of them are boomers, and they loved us. And they asked us why we were there, and we told them. And this one woman, she got a tear to her eye because she was like, "I didn't think anybody cared." And this is a true story, totally true story. And then the anarchists came, you know, the Antifa, the anarchists and the transsexuals and whatever, all these things. They came to counter-protest us. And I'm telling you, those people in that AmVets bar were right there with us. They loved it. They thought we were just about the coolest thing they had seen in a long time. They didn't care. They weren't like, oh, these guys might be Nazis or these guys are racist. No, they didn't care. They didn't care. They knew about the case. They knew nothing was being done. They knew the media wasn't talking about it. And they knew something shady was going on. They didn't have all the facts because the media is hiding it from people. But they knew something real shady was going on with that case. And then when these anarchists come showing up to protest us for saying this criminal needs to go to jail, or really, I think he should be punished to the absolute fullest extent of the law. You know, people are coming up to protest us. I mean, that's the other thing that's indefensible. It's absolutely their position is indefensible, and ours is utterly defensible. So we have
the left just can't get out of its own way, I think is what it is coming to. You know,
I'm not embarrassed about what I believe in the slightest. I will go out in the street with my own face and just tell you what it is, and people respect that. And I'm telling you, man, these people in Fargo, they thought it was
Napoleon said, when your enemy is making a mistake, don't interrupt him.
Men, we always talk about women being attracted to a strong man. Men want to be led, too. If you present leadership and resolution, they will follow. And, Keith, I know you have to be excited that Mike paid respect to the boomers. You're a boomer. I'm the world's oldest 41-year-old.
what I think is that, you know, it is a false flag or a false narrative to try to put this in generational terms. It's people who are common sense Americans on one hand versus people who are trying to pander their way to fame and fortune on the other.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, it's just like we always say, Keith, everybody in the 1930s, all the girls in Germany in the 1930s wanted to be with an SS officer. When things become trendy and fashionable again, ideas become in vogue again, everybody will fall in line, and that's what's going to happen. And
well,
Mike,
like manly men.
Mike, it will happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
My friend, thank you so much for coming on. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. The first of many collaborations to come,
yeah,
I hope.
Absolutely. Let's do it again.
We'll talk again soon. Mike Painovich, everybody, therightstuff.biz, National Justice Party. You
make,
check
make
them out.
Feel your pain.
Thank you, Mike. We'll be back with the third hour next. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned.